This is The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds. Cynthia Barnett spent quite a bit of time in Seattle while working on her new book, Rain, A Natural and Cultural History. That's perhaps to be expected, given our reputation as a rainy city. Cynthia Barnett is an environmental journalist who comes from Gainesville, Florida, and she joins us today from the studios of the University of Florida radio station there. And she just got the news that her book is a finalist for the National Book Award nonfiction category. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much, Ross. I still feel flabbergasted and excited. If my voice sounds crazy excited, that's the reason.
Well, in researching this book about rain, you came to Seattle thinking we were a model for changing the way that people live with rain. But when you got here, what did you find out?
Yeah, you know, I actually came to Seattle in the first place as an environmental journalist. I was working on a story for Orion magazine about how people are coming to live more ethically with water. So I had actually written about Seattle in the past. But when I set out to write a book of rain, and this is essentially a biography of rain, I came to Seattle knowing that it's not really the rainiest place in the United States, not by far. I think you guys get an average of about 38 inches of rainfall a year. Where I live in Florida, we get about 54, sometimes lots more than that. So I sort of came to write about the city of rain that isn't, you know, terribly rainy.
Well, statistically, maybe not the rainiest city, but it's got a rainy vibe, right? It's overcast a lot. It drizzles a lot of the year. How does rain affect people who live in rainy places?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think there are a lot of different answers, but I'll tell you one answer that I have. One thing I found is that rain really inspires creativity. And again, as you said, Ross, a rainy place, you know, you've got those beautiful silvery clouds that drizzle through winter and a bit of a gray sky and a dark sky. And, interviewing people and reading about creativity, I came to find out that sort of weather can really inspire creativity. So you've got, for example, you've got more published authors in Seattle than we have in many parts of sunny Florida. Iceland, I think, had the highest number of published authors per capita. And, this may have something to do with the weather, which sort of inspires hunkering down and thinking deeply and writing or doing other creative things.
So Seattle, maybe rain was an influence on our grunge culture, and Manchester, England also may have had an impact in its arts from the rain. Is that right?
Yeah, the really interesting thing to me about Seattle and Manchester is that, Seattle in the United States and Manchester in Great Britain have these wonderful reputations for this, you know, moody, independent rock genres, right? Seattle's grunge and Manchester's indie pop. And I just find that so interesting because they're both kind of drizzly places. And the other funny thing about Seattle and Manchester is that you're both sort of you're both sort of the nation's city of rain without being terribly rainy. So Seattle and Manchester, people both think of you guys as the rainiest place, but really, as we talked about earlier, you're both drizzly places. But yes, I put those two together, thinking there must be something in the rain when you think about the music that comes out of both Seattle and Manchester.
Well, having lived in the Northwest for many years, I have become a rain lover, almost more for the light than the actual rain itself, but the hues in the sky when rain's coming down or showers are coming down. Is there a psychological profile of people like you and me who actually like rainy weather?
I think there's a word for us. I think we're called pluviophiles, but I'm not sure if we have a psychological profile. I sort of like the drama of rain and the drama of a storm. Here in Florida, when there are too many sunny days just back to back and we don't have any dramatic weather, I feel a bit down. So I'm not sure what the psychological profile of that is, though.
Cynthia, in your book, Rain, A Natural and Cultural History, as the title implies, you talk about a wide variety of aspects of rain. But in your research on this, are there some favorite things that you learned, some things that just delighted you?
Oh my gosh, there was so much about this book that delighted me. And I think, you know, I think, and the way I went into it, I was assuming that rain sort of had this unfair reputation, right? It has this reputation for making the world dull and gray, but when you think about it, it's actually responsible for the brightest colors in nature. So, you know, in areas that have fall colors, when it rains a lot in summer, you have more vivid fall colors. We know that rain in the springtime leads to brighter and more widespread wildflowers. And I guess my favorite piece about the color that I didn't know before I started was how a hard rain actually scrubs the sky blue. You know, when we have days with a lot of pollution, and particularly in a city like Salt Lake City that is in a bowl, and you can see the pollution kind of stacking up in the sky, when there is a hard rain, it just scrubs that pollution away, and the sky is an incredible, bluebird blue. And that was one of my favorite facts about rain.
I got to say, I loved the fact that the shape of a raindrop is not what we think it is.
Yeah, I think that goes along with our misunderstanding about rain. And that's certainly something I never knew. From the time I can remember, I always drew a raindrop, just like a teardrop or like a drop dripping from the faucet. And it turns out that the picture in our mind's eye of a raindrop is completely upside down. You know, that drop of water with a pointy top and a fat rounded bottom, actually flip that upside down. In reality, raindrops fall in the shape of tiny parachutes. Their top is rounded by air pressure from below. So if you look at the actual shape of a raindrop, and you can find some neat NASA footage of this on YouTube, you see that they look more like little hamburger buns or little parachutes.
You also went to the rainiest place on Earth. Tell us about that.
Right. I went to the rainiest place on Earth, which is called Chirapunji, India. And when I first proposed this book, I wasn't planning to travel to Chirapunji. I was planning some other travel internationally. But as I interviewed scientists and experts, I kept hearing about this place, Chirapunji, India. And sort of every rain scientist I interviewed pined to go to Chirapunji, India in the monsoon season. And so I ultimately changed my plans and decided to go to Chirapunji, India. And I planned my trip so exactly. I wanted to see the manufacturer of a rain perfume, actually, in another part of India, which is another chapter. And I had to do that right before the monsoons began. And then I planned it so that I would hit Chirapunji at the beginning of monsoon season. And Ross, would you believe that I arrived in Chirapunji and it did not rain when I was there?
How disappointed,
oh my
were
gosh.
You?
That was one of the most disappointing things that's ever happened to me as a journalist. But, you know, at the same time, it turned out to be the perfect ending to my book of rain, because it's sort of the perfect example of the capriciousness of rain, which, of course, is a theme throughout the book. And the other irony was that my husband and kids back in Florida were dealing with the rainiest summer in Florida history. It was the rainiest summer we ever had on the books, and I completely missed that. Like rain was leaking into my car while I was gone, and there was this green stuff growing on the side of our house, and all of these rain events were happening at home, and I was sweating in the rainiest place on Earth under, totally cloudless skies. And it turns out that climate change is shifting the monsoonal patterns. And so climate scientists aren't able to say for sure if the rain patterns of Chirapunji are going to change as a result. But this is something they're very worried about and something they're watching. And so that was a way for me to, you know, to write about this beautiful place that was, built from rain. It's got incredible orchids, incredible bridges made from the banyan trees, like bioengineered bridges. So it was still a great place to visit, but unfortunately I didn't see it in the rain.
You said rain perfume. What's that?
Well, one angle I was interested in writing about rain was the scent of rain, because I just have a really strong sense of the scent of rain. You know, again, from my childhood in Florida, rain smells sort of like moss and pine and ozone. And so I started to research the scent of rain, and it turns out that the scent of rain comes from an oil that was identified as petrichor by some scientists in the 1960s. I was reading a paper from the journal Science from 1966 about this, you know, oil called petrichor that builds up from trees and plants, builds up in the earth, and then it's released when the rains come. And these scientists said, yeah, but we aren't the first people to discover this. There's actually a village in India where the villagers make a fragrance from this oil. I read that and I thought, there's no way I could be so lucky that the villagers of Kanauj, India are still making a rain fragrance. But I started to do some research. I came across a government entity in India called the Flavor and Development Center, and I ended up finding out that this village in India still makes the heady scent of rain that's released on the first monsoons. And your idea of the scent of rain is very much based on where you grew up and your memory of the scent of rain. So people in the arid desert American Southwest, their scent is sage. My scent is moss and pine from the American South. People in India have this really intense memory of the scent of rain that comes from those first monsoons falling on the earth that has soaked up so much of the plant oils over the long dry period. And so indeed there's a fragrance making village in India called Kanauj. They also make jasmine oils and sandalwood and other things, but one of their deepest and most special perfumes is called Midi Attar, and it's a rain perfume, and it is absolutely beautiful. And it smells like the earth, and Midi Attar actually means earth perfume, but it is the scent of a monsoon rain on dry earth.
Cynthia Barnett, it's been a pleasure.
Wonderful to talk with you, Ross. I hope you have a nice rainy winter.
Cynthia Barnett, her new book is called Rain, A Natural and Cultural History, and it's a finalist for a National Book Award. This is The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds.